Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 254, Side A of Never on the Back Foot podcast. In this episode, we discuss everything about the just concluded India versus England series that brought in so many talking points, observations, and takeaways. While we did see remarkable results, India was tested on a lot of frontiers, which made for enthralling encounters. On the podcast, joining us for the discussion, we have Mohit Shah. He is a freelance journalist who has been associated with ESPN Cricket Info, ESPN and Women's Cricket Zone in the past. A self-proclaimed cricket vegetable, he loves talking and reading about Olympic sports, kabaddi and the movies as well. Without further ado, let's get started. Hi Mohit, welcome back to Never on the Back Foot podcast. Now, I couldn't think of anyone better again to, you know, have this conversation with, because we have witnessed two such, you know, high octane series, right, with Australia and with England and Australia. So yeah, first things first, how are you doing today?
Hi, thank you so much for having me again, and I'm doing fine and excited to be on the podcast again. How are you doing?
Yeah, Mohit, thank you for that, and I'm doing well. Your tweets during the series has been, really resourceful, I'd say. And a lot of fans of yours also would agree with that. Like, a lot of my classmates would be like, hey, did you see Mohit's tweet? So your tweets have had that impact on us. Thank you for that. And
that's good to hear. Like, I didn't know there are people, like, I obviously know that you follow me on Twitter and, yeah, like, follow it quite closely, but I didn't know there were other people also who actually do that. So that's quite pleasing to hear. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, you have a fan base somewhere, the kind of research you do. So when we look at this series now, starting off with the England series, we had the T20I start off the series. So how satisfied were you with, like, the selections for India? Because we were playing after a very long gap. And the last recognized series was, of course, you know, that whole Bangladesh series. And then there was, like, the Asian Games and everything. Huge layoff. And then this.
Yeah, like you said, there had been a significant layoff post the Asian Games, and they hadn't really played a lot of international cricket in the last 6 months or so. So yeah, it felt like the squad was largely fine, like, apart from Sneh Rana again not being included mysteriously in the T20I squad. The rest of it seemed fine to me. Like, I also felt probably they could have included somebody like Uma Chhetri as the backup wicket keeper, because just before that series there was the India A versus England A series where she was India A's most impressive batter. But yeah, apart from those two, I think largely the selections were fine. It was good to see them include Shreyanka Patil for the first time in an India squad, which was a great inclusion. And then she, like, showed that as well. Saika also was included for the first time, and she's performed brilliantly in the past 12 or 18 months. So I was pretty happy to see those two get included in the T20I squad.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, there were, like, some selections that were questionable. But then again, you know, the inclusion of fresh faces was a welcome sight. And even looking at the series at large, now England won the series 2-1. So what are your first observations to, you know, kind of kickstart our discussion? And did you see it coming?
I thought, like, if there was a T20I series that India could have won in this home season, it was probably against England. But England, again, are one of the better T20I sides. Their all-time win-loss record is almost as good, actually even better than Australia's. So T20Is is a format that they are really good at. And for this series, they also had a full-strength team, unlike the last time when India went to England, when both Nat Sriverbrant and Heather Knight didn't feature in the series. So I thought England were the favourites, and it was good that India won one match, but I think the two matches that they lost were both very one-sided. So it was more disappointing to see the margin of defeat rather than India losing, because England are obviously the higher ranked and stronger team. So I would have wanted India to compete a little more in the two matches that they went on to lose.
Oh, yes, definitely. And we will talk about that in a little detail because I think India's conservative approach has definitely, come under the scanner. And the manner in which they lost the first two T20Is was kind of very disappointing, right? Now, even if you look at the first T20I, now England blasted off to 197. And in return, we saw India muster just 150 odd on the board. So, what were your thoughts and, the mindset in that match?
Yeah, I think like England recovered really well because at one point they were 2 for 2 in the first over, and Renuka Singh Thakur had like sent two of their better batters back. So from there to have almost a 140 odd run partnership, like their senior players stepped up, Danny Wyatt and Nat Sivabrant. It also helped Danny Wyatt fetch a good WPL contract as well. I'm sure that innings played its part in UP Warriors bidding for her. But yeah, as far as India are concerned, I don't think they should have let England get to that big a total in the first place. I think there were a few drop catches in this match as well, which was probably a portent of things to come right through the season. So I think India's fielding firstly wasn't up to the mark in this match, and then after that, yeah, like you said, with the batting, they never really appeared to be in the chase. Like the only Indian batter who got a decent score was Shefali Varma, and even her strike rate after a point started to sink. Like she got off to a fast start, but couldn't really score all that quickly after the power play. So to lose by 40 odd runs wasn't really a great effort. Like India should have at least got into 175 on that pitch, especially considering they were batting second and there was a little bit of dew as well. So the conditions weren't like against them. So yeah, it was disappointing to see them lose that opening T20I in the way they did.
Oh, yes, certainly. I think, losing wickets in clumps has been a problem, not just for the women's team, even the men's team. And you'd think, that the second T20I would be better and India would have learned their lessons. But again, that was an absolute eyesore, right? India was dismissed for 80 in what was a very, again, disappointing show. So what do you think went wrong there? Were England just the better side and India couldn't quite get under their skin?
Yeah, England obviously were the better side, but I felt like India lost way too many wickets in the power play. I think they lost 4 wickets in that match in the first 6 overs, and I don't think you can win too many T20Is when you lose those many wickets in the power play. So I think like, and that pitch was different to the first one. It actually had a little bit in it for the spinners. I thought India like just went out thinking this is the same pitch as the first T20I. So what it showed was a lack of flexibility in their approach, and again some question marks in their ability to play spin. I think that was a problem which emerged during the Bangladesh tour as well, where they like kept struggling against their spinners. And in this match as well, I think India lost quite a few wickets to spin. I think Charlie Dean did a lot of damage early up front, getting both of India's openers, and then later Sophie Eccleston and Sarah Glenn also got into the act. And considering the next World Cup is in Bangladesh, I think that is an area that India needs to work on, how to play spin and how to like score at a good rate also against spin.
Oh, definitely. I think this weakness against spin has been exposed. And even in our, side B conversation now in the series versus Australia, we did have our fair share of, struggle like rotating the strike, getting those crucial boundaries. And somewhere, this whole discourse around India losing and having this conservative approach died off because in that third T20I, we finally got back to winning ways. But it was already kind of late. So what were your major talking points from the third T20I that kind of did go in India's favor, but still gave you food for thought?
Yeah, I think like it was a good consolation win for India, but England like didn't really play its best 11 in that match, considering they'd already won the series. So they were giving their younger and inexperienced players some game time. So there was no Nat Sivabrant, no Danny Wyatt, who were like England's two best batters in the series. Two of their better bowlers, Sarah Glenn and Lauren Bell also were rested for this match. So I think India would be happy with the win, but I think the big positive for India in this match was how their two series debutants played. Like both Shreyanka Patil and Saika Ishak got 3-4s in this match and bowled really well. So it like kind of showed that they have the ability to succeed at the international level as well after their exploits in the IPL, sorry, in the WPL as well as on the domestic Indian circuit. So I think the big positive for India from this match was how well those two bowled, and then Amanjot Kaur coming out and finishing the innings with an over to spare. Those two, three quick boundaries that she got in the end was good to see, because sometimes in the past, India haven't really been able to even successfully chase down middling scores like this. So I think India's youngsters were probably the big positive for them from the third T20.
Actually, I mean, because we've often seen how India kind of hinges and depends largely on their star players to perform. But seeing the youngsters, come to the fore and actually deliver has to be a big positive. But even at large, when you look at the series, although India went down 2-1, and at last T20, I did give us an indication of some sort of positive change. Do you have any major positives that India could take away for that Australia series? And did you see that happening?
Yeah, I think for the England T20Is, largely the bowling would have to be the positive, because the bowlers did pretty well in two of the three T20Is, and like we were just saying, especially both Shreyanka and Saika had a fairly good debut series against one of the best teams in the world. Like both of them took 5 wickets apiece. And I think the other big positive for India was Renuka Singh Thakur, because she had been out of action for almost six months or so at the international level. So for her to come back and continue to bowl the way she was bowling before that injury setback was very pleasing, because she ended with the most wickets for India in this series. She still had that swing and troubled England's batters, especially in the power play. So I think India's bowling largely was pretty good, and especially these three were the standouts I felt from an Indian perspective.
Oh, yes, definitely. And even looking at England right now, they were obviously the winners, and they had a lot of players who kind of stepped up when the team needed them the most. And actually, winning a series in India is quite credible, right? So, any positives for England to take away from the series?
Yeah, I think plenty of positives for them, because just like Renuka, Sophie Eccleston also was making a comeback after that shoulder injury, which was kind of a major injury because she had to undergo surgery. And also just for them to see her come back into action and have the kind of success that she has been having for so many years now must have been very reassuring, because she's clearly now the leader of that attack with Catherine Siverbrunt and Anya Shrapsole retired. So if they are to win the next World Cup or do well there in Bangladesh, their spinners are going to be key, and all their three spinners were excellent right through the series, be it Sophie Eccleston, Charlie Dean, or Sarah Glenn. I think the one area of concern for them is their pace bowling, because their pace bowlers haven't really gotten as many wickets as they would want them to, especially in the power play or at the death. So that is the one area that they would definitely want to improve on. And the other positive for them was obviously Nat Siverbrunt and Danny Watt again getting the job done as they have so many times. So, but they would want their younger players also to step up, the likes of Phyllis Capseys, Sophia Dunkley, Maya Bouchier, because the two matches that they won, and even in the match that they lost, it was Heather Knight who was the standout player apart from Nat Siverbrunt and Danny Watt. So I think the experienced players stood up for England, which was not the case for England for India. And I think that was one of the major differences in why England won the series and India didn't.
Oh yeah, that's actually well put, and I think it's also a matter of these moments, I think England made the most of them. That kind of also reflected in the match results kind of going in their favor. And now, let's take our conversation on to the one-off test, right? This was, of course, a matter of a lot of celebration for Team India because when it comes to test matches, I think India is a beast, right? So what do you make of it? And were you happy with how the one match, the one test, one-off test proceeded?
Yeah, I think like India has probably established themselves as the number one test side because when they went to England and Australia, they managed to draw those tests. And now coming back to their home conditions, they beat England quite comprehensively. And I think like when you're playing test cricket in a certain country, you have to adapt to the challenges. And if you're playing tests in India, the ball will turn. And I think India made a pitch which suited their strengths, which is spin bowling. So their spinners made the most of it, and their batters also stepped up to the challenge because England had some good spinners. They probably have the best spinner in the world in Sophie Eccleston, but India did negotiate that threat pretty well by putting on 400 plus runs in the first innings. And so the pitch clearly wasn't all that bad. And I think like India probably, yeah, now can claim to be the best test side in the world, considering they've not lost a test for more than a decade now.
Certainly. I mean, a lot of things did work well in India's favor. And before we delve deeper into the match, like, what were your thoughts on India and England selections? Because India had a lot of fresh faces and debuts, and England also, had their fair share of interesting selections. So, what were your observations?
Yeah, for India, I think they had quite a few debutants, like you rightly mentioned. And out of those, most were along expected lines. Like, I think both Jemima and Renuka were almost certain to debut. The surprise package was Shubha Satish, though, because I don't think too many people would have anticipated her even being in the squad in the first place. But clearly, like the selectors must have seen something in her to draft her into the squad. And then the team management must have been impressed with whatever they saw of her in the nets because, like, she not only debuted, but also got to bat at that crucial number three position for India. So I think she was probably the surprise pick in the Indian 11 because people must have expected Harleen Dhiaul or Richa Ghosh to probably get picked considering they have a lot more international experience, but it proved to be quite an inspired selection because she top scored for India in that first innings and just looked like a very classy player. As far as England are concerned, I think they probably misread the pitch because they went in with just two spinners and three pacers, and eventually their pacers didn't really end up doing a lot of bowling, especially in the second innings. So I feel like England probably misread the pitch a fair bit, considering they did have an extra spinner in their squad who is a pretty good spinner, Kirsty Gordon. So I think they should have probably played three spinners in hindsight instead of just two spinners and four pacers.
Enough, and I think this was one format, I think where like England was really tested, and India actually did come out on top. Now, even looking at India's batting, India made 428, which was quite fascinating because you had brilliant knocks courtesy of Shubha Satish, the debutant, and Jemima Rodrigues, with even the late flourish coming in from Yastika Bhatia and Deepti Sharma. So, do you think it was like a comprehensive batting effort, and the toss really played an important role here?
Yeah, I think it was a very impressive batting effort, but I don't think the toss played all that important a role as such because if anything, like the pitch was pretty good to bat on when England batted first. So I don't think like the toss played all that important a role, but yeah, I felt like India did like make the most of batting first on that pitch. Like if in India you win the toss and opt to bat first, the key is to bat big and bat not bat once actually, because though in this match they did have the option eventually of batting just once, But yeah, like if you win the toss and opt to bat first in India, I think it's a given that in a test you do need 400 or at least 350 on the board if you want to like be competitive. And I think India did that pretty well with four different batters getting a half century. And I think like their batting depth really helped. Like having a player like Pooja Vastrakar coming in at nine is easily, like she can easily bat at least a couple of places higher than that, even in test cricket. So that kind of depth gave India an edge because they had real quality batters from number one to nine. And somebody like Deepti Sharma or even Jemima or Shubha Satish, all of them are very technically sound batters. So you do expect batters like that to have success in test cricket. So it was very pleasing to especially see the two debutants, Jemima and Shubha, do so well because India did lose both their openers pretty early. So that partnership between those two was key, I felt.
Oh yeah, that definitely did augur well for India. And looking at England on the other hand, now they had a very tough first innings, getting bundled out for what, 136. So what do you think did not really work well for them? And somehow were you surprised that India did not want to enforce that follow on because the bowling was just looking brilliant, right?
Yeah, the bowling was absolutely brilliant, but I felt like it was actually a piece of fielding which changed the momentum because just when it was looking like Tammy Beaumont and Nat Sivabrant are going to have like a huge partnership for England, Pooja Vastrakar ran Tammy Beaumont out with an excellent piece of fielding. And after that, like England completely collapsed, going from 79 for two to 136 all out, like you said. So that one magical moment in the field really turned it around for India because till that time, like the two batters who were there in the middle were looking fairly untroubled. As for enforcing the follow-on, I think India also factored in that just 3 days after the end of this test, they had to play another test. And both Renuka Singh Thakur and Pooja Vastrakar have had their fair share of injury issues. So there was no point like risking an injury with those pacers, even though they just bowled like less than 10 overs in that innings. But still, like, why not bat again? And especially in a test where like batting in the fourth innings is always difficult. So it made sense for India to not enforce the follow-on, I felt. So for me personally, I think it was the right decision to not enforce the follow-on and bat again.
That actually does make sense. And looking at India's bowling as well, what were your major positives? Because as you rightly pointed out, Renuka Singh Thakur and Pooja Vastrakar adding so much value to the side, and they're such assets because we've seen how injuries have kind of plagued their career and it has been a cause for concern. But positive signs from that kind of a bowling effort?
Yeah, I think like India's off spinners were very impressive. Like Sneh Rana and Deepti Sharma did the bulk of the damage. Sneh Rana got the key wicket of Nat Sivabrant, and then Deepti Sharma ran through the middle order and lower order, picking up like a really quick five for in just 30 odd balls. So I think like India's off spinners, there was like a portion on the pitch outside the right hander's off stump where like the ball was turning a fair bit from, but you need significant skill to like hit that area over after over, and also to like put enough revolutions on the ball for it to turn and deceive the batter. I think one problem for England was also that they didn't have any left-handers from 1 to 11. It was all right-handers, so there was no variation in their batting order, and India's off-spinners really enjoyed bowling to right-hander after right-hander, and they like kind of made the most of it through that patch on the pitch, which was providing them with a fair bit of assistance.
Enough. And now we spoke about this point that India came into bat not enforcing that follow on. So somewhere do you think that India's 186 for six in that second essay was actually good? And did you actually see that overnight declaration coming? Do you think that was actually a strategic ploy and something that was well thought of?
I personally didn't see that overnight declaration coming because Harmanpreet Kaur was on 44, and this was probably her only opportunity, not her only, but a great opportunity for her to finally get a test 50, so which is something that she's never achieved. So it was quite selfless of her actually to declare, because India could have easily chosen to bat for another half an hour, and they had enough runs, because when they declared, England were chasing 479, which wasn't realistic on that pitch. But India could have easily like chosen to bat for half an hour, let Harmanpreet get her 50, take the total to 500, and then declare. But it was a very positive and selfless declaration from the coach and captain, especially to like sacrifice a personal milestone for the team's sake is not something that we see very often in Indian cricket. So it was a good move, a very positive move. And then they reaped the benefits of it as well, because England got bowled out within a session, I think, on the third day. So yeah, like it was a positive move, and it paid off handsomely for them.
Agreed. I mean, I think even, Harmanpreet Kaur later said, "I'll always have more opportunities to get a 50," which was quite selfless of her, considering, how her captaincy kind of did come under the scanner at certain points in the series and in the subsequent Australia series as well. And as you rightly pointed out, like, coming back to bowl out England for 131 was a remarkable feat. And, at that point, they were just looking like such a dominant side. So how remarkable was that to see?
Yeah, I think like after that first innings, nobody really expected England to chase 479 down or even draw this match, because they would have had to bat out six sessions, which wasn't going to be easy on that pitch. But what most people would have expected from a team like them is to like maybe get 250 or 300, or if not get those many runs, at least like bat for three or four sessions. So like for India to bowl them out in just 27.3 overs was like an exceptional effort. And I think like again it was Pooja Vastrakar who did the bulk of the damage, because she got their two best batters in Heather Knight and Nat Sivabrant, and she also dismissed Sophia Dunkley, who has been out of form for a while now but is a dangerous player because she can score pretty quickly and is the kind of player who can like change the complexion of a match in a session. So I think like Pooja Vastrakar's early strikes really made a huge difference and just lifted the team up, because like to see that fast bowler in full flow rattling stumps of a player like Nat Sivabrant, getting like England players caught behind, and yeah, using the new ball so well, just like must have given a lot of energy to the team. And the spinners then obviously had enough quality of their own and also assistance in the pitch to thrive, and they just did that. And England like never really recovered after losing those three early wickets. So yeah, I think all in all it was India's biggest win ever in test, so as comprehensive as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, there were, so many positives to take away from the win. You're also forging a lot of records, which is quite fascinating in that sense. But another major talking point is, how a lot of experts and, fans from England were making this whole complaint that the pitch, kind of favored India, and it's always dust bowls out here. So why do you see this discourse around pitches, mostly centering like subcontinent pitches, and why not the other way around?
I think it inevitably has to do with where the power centers lied in cricket for so long. Like, for much of the 20th century, it was England and Australia who were in like positions of power and dominating the cricket world's structures, or even like the cash flows and things of that sort. It's only in the last 25 years or so that India's like become the biggest superpower when it comes to the cricketing economy and also the power structures at the ICC and things of that sort. So I feel like it just comes from that mindset where you've like been calling the shots for so long. So now they find it a little difficult to acknowledge that there's another country which is like now probably calling the shots and also winning on the field as well, not just like having sway in off-field decisions, but dominating on field as well. But I think this mostly comes from the fans or experts who are sitting on the sidelines, because I didn't see like the England players make too many excuses. They just got on with it. They were not good enough, and that's it. So it can happen. Like, to be fair to them, like I was saying, they also don't play a lot of test cricket, and they didn't have any time to acclimatize with a warm-up game or anything of that sort. So it was difficult for them, considering they don't encounter such conditions. And I don't think the players made any excuses. So I think, like, when you lose, fans generally try to find some excuses for their team. So it was more just a case of that, because otherwise, like we were discussing earlier, like, it's called test cricket for a reason, and every host country has the right to like make a pitch that suits them or their team. And that is what makes international cricket unique, because like the conditions in Australia are very different to England, and then same for India. So like every country has its own unique challenges, and like the best players tend to conquer those challenges, and ultimately the pitch is the same for both the teams. So whoever usually plays the better cricket wins.
Yeah, and that's exactly how it should be, right? Because when we go to foreign conditions, I don't think we complain a lot. So that, tells a story in itself. And even though, we had so much of discourse around the pitch and everything, I'm sure you might have, made a note of like top performers from both the teams that really kind of, stood out for you. And any performances that particularly stay with you?
Yeah, I think for England, it was hard to pick a top performer considering most of their players didn't really have a great match. But I thought Nat Sivabrant did pretty well. Like, the knock she played in the first inning showed her quality, because there were like wickets falling all around her. But she was the only batter who was batting with any semblance of fluency. And she also, like, while she was bowling, like, she bowled quite tight lines and didn't really give much away. I think Lauren Bell also did pretty well on a pitch that didn't really have much in it for the Pacers. So I think like those two were probably the standout players for England. As far as India is concerned, I think almost everybody from 1 to 11 made some kind of contribution. But I think like Deepti Sharma obviously was the standout, because she got that crucial 60 odd in the first innings, which helped India get past 400. And then she took almost half the wickets that fell for England. Like, taking 9 wickets for just 39 runs is a fantastic effort. It's not something that happens all that often. The two debutant batters again were excellent, Shubha Satish and Jemima. I think we've spoken enough about them. Pooja Vastrakar, again, this was probably her best test performance ever. Like, the wickets she took were quite crucial, got that important run out as well. Yastika Bhatia was very good, both behind the stumps and with the bat. Harmanpreet Kaur was really on fire in this match, like, got two crucial 40s, had that selfless declaration, led the team pretty well, was spot on with her bowling changes and all. It's not always easy to rotate three high quality spinners in a test. Like, sometimes one bowler tends to be under bowled, but I thought she did quite well considering the quality of bowlers India had in getting the best out of them and rotating them. So yeah, for India, I thought there were lots of positives from this test.
Yes, again, agree with you on that line of thought, because we often see how India gets, subdued by oppositions, that play really well. But seeing us, come to the forefront and deliver, and the performances that kind of really will stay with us. And even, looking at a larger point of how do you think we can market women's test cricket? Because I think we saw like the crowds, thronging the stadiums, but it was like just in a select pocket, right? So how do you think we can market women's test cricket and try to get in more and more crowds invested in like this format?
Yeah, I think like getting more and more crowds in is a challenge for test cricket, not just in women's cricket, but also in men's cricket. And that is also one of the primary reasons why a lot of countries now, apart from the top three or four nations, aren't very keen on playing test cricket. Like, when it comes to the women, it's only 4 countries who are playing it. And that is for a reason, because ultimately, like, boards also want to look at the kind of revenue that is being generated by a format. So unfortunately, like when it comes to test cricket, I think it just has to do with the times we are living in, because I don't think people, a lot of people anymore, have that kind of time where they would be sparing 7 hours every day to go to the stadium and watch a match for 4 or 5 days in a row. So it's just a format that, and especially when you have alternatives like T20 or even ODIs, which is 7 hours, but 7 or 8 hours, but just one day. So I think people just prefer that. And especially with tests like them being held on weekdays during daytime. So that is when everybody's either at work or in school or college. So it's not really conducive also for people to go. So I can see why there were only 500 odd or 1,000 odd people in attendance, because at the same stadium a few weeks later, like all the T20Is were almost sold out or had very healthy attendances. So as far as marketing is concerned, like you can obviously like advertise it a little more, try to create more awareness. But I just feel like with the attention spans that people have nowadays and the kind of lives people lead, it's difficult to see test cricket being played in front of packed houses. Maybe like if they take it to smaller cities, I don't know though, like whether people would turn up even there, because like in Mumbai, generally the crowds, Mumbai, this was played in Navi Mumbai. So yeah, in Navi Mumbai, the crowds are probably the best in India for women's cricket. So if there people didn't show up for a test match, it's difficult to imagine too many people showing up anywhere in India for a test match.
That's true, because I think this is another problem that even men's cricket faces, right? In test cricket, like we don't have test centers like Australia, so matches happen everywhere and there's always this concern with crowds. But I think you'd certainly raise valid points, you know, trying to just get in more sponsors, advertise it better, and, you know, just see this enthusiasm coming in from the fans as well. And fingers crossed, we get to see a lot more test matches, not just, you know, featuring the big three in world cricket at the moment, but even opportunities to, say, teams like South Africa, Pakistan, West Indies, Sri Lanka would be nice to see, right?
Yeah, obviously. I think it would be great to see those countries play test cricket as well, like the ones you mentioned, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, West Indies, or even New Zealand, because currently it's only India, Australia, England, and South Africa who are playing tests. And for South Africa also, they are only playing away tests. Like their board isn't really hosting any tests as such. So it's either England or Australia that's hosting them. So like it would be great to see, but I don't see it happening, because I don't see any board. Like most of the boards that you mentioned aren't like very keen on even hosting men's tests, which they've been hosting for a much longer period of time compared to women's tests. So for them, hosting a women's test might not really make a lot of sense. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of players in those countries will do really well in test cricket. Maybe like people like Stefani Taylor or Susie Bates or Bisma Maruf, like people like them would actually make for very good test cricketers. It's sad that they've never gotten the opportunity to play one. But looking at how cricket's moving, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, that is the unfortunate reality that we kind of live in. And here's hoping, you know, ICC makes a genuine investment in women's test cricket, because I think even in Side B, you know, we will be talking about the Australia test match, the kind of you know, talking points and the result it brought in. That was actually brilliant to see, right? So yeah, that pretty much does conclude our conversation in Side A. Thank you so much, Mohit, for, you know, once again enlightening us with your lovely insights. And yeah, see you in Side B.
Thank you so much for having me, and yeah, see you soon.
Cheers.